Welcome all you lifers out there. We got another episode of Two Gloves and a Dub today with the crew. We got Mikey coming in now, possibly, but right now we got Mr. Alon Cruz, the self-proclaimed casual, Lindell DeVoe, Mr. Tony Clark, and Papa Josh here. First, let's talk about this merch that we finally got launched on ProWrestlingTees.com. All the lifers podcast got, majority of the shows got their own shirt, which are looking good. I'll get into that story. Anyways, let me finish this promo. 20% off if you use Labor Day right now. I believe tomorrow's going to be the last day, or today technically, because it's going to be Monday. Cop it, you get 20% off. Just use the promo code Labor Day. And then, with that being said, going into my story, I was going to buy one, and then I had to get a new card because there's some suspect stuff on my bank account.
Oh, shit.
My statements, I was like, Uber rides. I didn't take an Uber. So I had to change it. So I was like, damn it, I can't order these shirts. So I'll wait. But I'm excited, man. I can't wait to see what these shirts come out and look like. I was getting the premium t-shirts, too, because you can.
You got to get that soft shit.
You know? Soft
shit.
Cool. So, fellas, let's talk about Fight Night. So last night, I saw bits and pieces. I unfortunately was enjoying myself a little too much with my brother and some football drafts and
possibly.
Put me to sleep. And but I got to watch some of these fights. Paheya, if I'm saying that correctly, saw his fight. Saw some of Overeem's. I missed the finish, unfortunately, but I saw that he got the dub and got another finish. And I think I was in and out of the women's fight. I don't really recall who.
Viviana Araújo.
Viviana, okay.
Araújo.
I saw some of the highlights now, like just recently. She looked pretty good. And then,
I was surprised they, just in my opinion, I was surprised they called it a unanimous decision, 30-27. I thought Montana was doing a little better than a 30-27, but maybe
second
I'm
round.
Wrong.
Second
yeah,
round.
But.
I didn't think she was doing that great the whole fight.
I mean, I would see it 29-28. Like, she was starting to pick up in the second round, and then I think Araújo, you know, figured out whatever she needed to change in the third.
She made the adjustments. Yeah.
Right.
Because
but
she
I guess.
Walking backwards. Mm-hmm. Montana.
Can't do that.
Like, the entire
can't do that.
Fight.
Yeah.
Come forward. You know, like, in the first round, it was about her trying to get the fight to the ground. And Viviani was, like, very active, like, in her takedown defense off the cage. She didn't like, you know how most fighters, like I do it a lot too, when someone pushes you on the cage, you tend to like chill on the cage, you play from here. Viviani wasn't having it. She would push the cage, underhook, circle out. She would get off the cage immediately. She did that really well.
Nice.
You don't want to get controlled up against it.
Yeah, you don't. And Viviani did a really good job because I guess Montana, her whole thing is her ground game. Mm-hmm. And
100%.
But the issue is like she was letting Viviani her head movement the whole time. Head movement, faint. She kept fainting, and then Montana would throw and miss, and then Viviani would counter. And she did a really good job of keeping forward pressure on her the whole time. I don't think Montana ever left the warning track of the cage
pretty much
the entire fight. She kept backing up the entire time.
And was her cardio? Oh, sorry. I was going to ask. Was her cardio looking good too during that? Because that seems like a lot of
neither of them
moving.
Got tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I just think the power was on Arujo's side because Montana probably more so wanted to get it to the ground because she is more of a ground specialist. And I just felt like probably she got hit by something she didn't like, so she was didn't want to like you know walk into that fire.
Yeah,
but you ain't gonna win a fight walking backwards.
Nope. And she did that for three rounds.
Yeah, and we'll just talk about them real quick, just because they're fast. I'll just say it because it happened, but Hunter Azur beat Cole Smith via unanimous decision. I think he wrestled him mostly to that decision.
Okay.
Brian Kelleher defeated what?
No, okay, that's the fight.
Brian Kelleher defeated Ray Rodriguez via guillotine in 39 seconds.
39 seconds.
Yeah.
He chose the wrong move. I don't know why that dude shot a double.
Yeah.
I love Kelleher.
Don't shoot a double on him. Like, that's his bread and butter.
I think that's what I was going to mention. That's what I was pointing out the fight. I believe that he didn't know who his opponent was until, like,
he didn't.
That day.
I think it was two days or a day. I want to say Kelleher had two different opponents, and then at the end, it was Ray Rodriguez. So, like, he had one opponent in the beginning, that guy pulled out. Then he had Kevin Navidad. He was forced to withdraw due to undisclosed reasons. And then he had Ray Rodriguez, short notice, and Ray just shot on him, not knowing, like, I'm going to choke you out. He took his neck all the way home, though.
And he got 50 G's.
Hey, man's making money. Make money.
This year alone, like, my rough calculation of, like, how many fights he's had, I looked up what his payouts were, as well as he's had three bonuses this year. He's made $371,000 this year. Just this year alone. And he's probably going to fight again before the end of the year.
See, this is the one reason I want to Kelleher versus Sean O'Malley before they booked Cheeto versus Sean O'Malley. Kelleher's been fighting a lot of good guys, vets and young guys, and he's well-rounded. And I wanted to see him. I mean, obviously, it doesn't matter now because Sean lost already. But that was one fight I did want. But I think at this point, Kelleher went 3-1 this year. You can't even compare.
Yeah.
Sean
Lawler.
Right.
And that
was a good fight as well. Yeah. With him and Stamen. You could do Stamen O'Malley, maybe.
What do you see next for Brian?
You could do Cheeto Kelleher again, or is that how long ago did they fight?
I don't know. I think Cheeto's going to want to line up, though.
I think so, too. Yeah. So maybe
Kelleher O'Malley, you mentioned, I think would be a good matchup.
Well, I know Kelleher. Yeah.
Kelleher's still coming off a loss.
I know Kelleher, he probably is going to want a good name, too. Like, again, 3-1 in the year? That ain't right. I think that's what
great.
It is.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad. And it's where September, is he bro. He can. I don't even think he's top 15 yet. Yeah.
He's doing
a lot of short notice Fight Island fights. So, like, he was getting back to work. He was getting to work. Yeah. He's just getting work.
That first fight back in 2017. So it's been some time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Andre Munoz defeated Bartosz Fabinski with a slick armbar he threw in the first round as well. That was nice, but. I just wanted to talk about those fights real quick just before we got into the main card stuff, obviously. But I guess we can start with Michelle Pereira and Zalim Imedov.
I mean,
you slap me, I slap you. I don't know. Right? You slap me at the weigh-ins, I dog you in the fight. I don't know how that works. But he was coming with a certain energy at the weigh-ins that did not come out during the fight, for sure.
You're right. I think Michelle or Mikhail, however you pronounce his first name, he ran the confidence. I mean, he's always had the confidence, right? Like, that's nothing in the showmanship. But, mm-hmm. Me and Alon were talking about it before we started the pod of just how he, and I think that the commentators mentioned it too, how he's calmed down a lot with some of the wild kind of showmanship moves. The fence thing, I'm like, damn, bro. I mean, the way he hops off that fence was like nothing. Like, his athletic ability to just hop off that was wild. But man, he really calmed it down and showed that he can just outstrike you, man. He knows where to take his shots. He knows how to the octagon control or how to move with you. And his pace, man, was crazy on this guy. And
I would like him to take it down 25% more. Just take it down just a little bit more. What the hell? he looked very good. It was like completely one sided. I don't even know what to say. Like, it was all.
And he's so explosive, dude. He's fast. He'd be like messing around. He's like looking away, and then all of a sudden turns and he hits that straight right. He hit that straight right almost every single time, and Imedov didn't react to it.
Tony, you said take it down 25% more. Don't you think that the showmanship and all of the extra stuff you're talking about, don't you think that makes him a little unpredictable to keep the fighters on their toes?
I just need you to be able to do it for 5 rounds.
I feel you.
Yeah, that's true.
Because all that's cool. Like, I think like Zabit as well as many other flashy fighters or somebody who moves a lot. There's an Asian guy that fights out of Team Alpha that is he's very moves the entire time, dodges all the time. By the time the third round comes, though, can you keep that pace? Because I know Zabit, he fades in the third. Michelle in other fights hasn't looked the same, but he looked better this time, obviously, which is a huge, huge plus. I like seeing that cardio change.
Is this his first fight in front of no fans?
Yes.
Was that Sanchez fight? I think that Sanchez fight was last year, right?
Yeah.
But there were fans, though.
They were fans. Yeah, no. I know if it was last year, I would assume there were still fans.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that people, it's like almost like without that extra adrenaline from the fans, you can really tell whose cardio is kind of in tip-top shape right now.
Oh, for sure.
He does get hyped up, for sure. Like, I mean, imagine people. He's doing all these flips and shit, and people are going crazy. Yeah. You know he feeds off of that. He's probably like, he gets hyped and he's like, hey, I'm going to keep doing this. Like, that feels so good. And, you know, he gets the reaction from the crowd. He's a showman. He's an entertainer for sure, which all fighters are entertainers at the end of the day. Like, you have to think about that.
But, 100%.
You know, you got to get the win. So it's kind of a, you know, pick and choose 50-50 type of deal, like on a weight scale.
I mean, some people fall on that sword, right? Like, there's guys, you know, Justin Gaethje is probably one amongst that, you know, earlier in his career. He still is kind of, but he's toned it down, obviously, and he's picking his shots better. But before, he would just get in the brawl. He would do that kind of Max Holloway thing, you know, kind of, hey, let's go center of the ring and just go blow for blow and see who drops. And, you know, they're exciting, though. I mean,
no, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I was listening to somebody who mentioned, McCarthy, I think, was talking about on his podcast about how there's certain fighters that can lose and still win, kind of thing. Like Conor McGregor, he loses, but he's still one of the hottest fighters out there. People want to see him fight again.
Romero lost against Usman,
and people still want to see him fight. Nate Diaz lost against Masvidal, but they still want to see him fight again. And now that rematch, I think, is potentially booked. I don't know, but you know, there's some guys that like out there that really have this aura to them that even when they lose and in defeat, they can still, you know,
win.
Get something. Yeah, win. Get another fight in their
Robbie
name.
Robbie Lawler as well.
For a while, yeah. I mean, right now, I would say
he's at the end. Probably
McGregor and Masvidal seem to be the two.
Yeah. Israel might be the next one.
Mm-mm. We'll see, man. I think
he lost a lot of people after that last fight.
I heard someone mention kind of the outlook, and because, you know, he's a counterpuncher, right? And usually most people fall into his trap. Yeah, and Yoel didn't do that. Yoel just said, I'm going to wait here. And so it's kind of like just stylistically probably the worst.
They both wanted to counterpunch.
So I think that's why the Paulo fight is going to be so interesting, because Izzy's got to be on point with his countering, and his cardio better be on point, because the pace that Paulo's going to put is going to be
It should be like the Kelvin fight again, except worse, because Paulo Costa is not Kelvin Gastelum.
Yeah, right.
But in a weird way, I could see this being like Conor Jose in a weird alternate universe. I could see this being kind of like a quick flash in the pan.
I think
Paulo, if he's ultra aggressive coming in, and Izzy catches him coming in, I can see that happening.
He's not really wild like that. He's not well.
His big thing is if he can get him on the fence, I think.
Right.
And keep him there. That's gonna be a problem for Izzy. So I think, you know, Izzy's just gonna have to circle out a lot, because this guy's gonna constantly push the pace. I mean, that's why I think Izzy will win, though, is because of his counterpunch. I think he's gonna end up just piecing him up because his striking, I think, is better. I just think that if he gets caught, though, which is very will happen.
Can't counterpunch if you're unconscious.
As Izzy circles out, he needs to kick Izzy to the body and punch Izzy to the body. Like, as he's circling out, don't chase for the headshots.
Mm-hmm.
Attack the body only. If he circles out, attack the body when y'all reset, then, you know, try to work him back against the cage.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be a problem for Paulo either, though, because he does like to dig the body. He digs the body a lot.
Mm-hmm. Uriah Hall is still feeling that.
Well, especially because Izzy leans back a lot, so he would leave the abs open to be hit. Yeah, because that's all it would do if I was fighting.
I'm excited for that fight, man. I think that fight's going to be. I don't know who the co-main event is on that card, but I'm hoping it's.
Let me see if I can find it real quick.
I don't know.
I know we're really eating off the fight.
Let's see if I can beat Costa.
Everybody, I think, thinks Costa's going to win besides me.
No, currently it's Dominique Reyes and Jay Blackowitz.
Yep, yep. Jan.
Oh, that's the co? Okay.
I'm sorry, nice. Jan.
Wow. Two title fights? That's what's up.
Two title fights, yeah. It's actually, I want to feel like the card got a little bit better over time, but maybe I'm just being generous. But I was happy they added. Me too. But I will say that Jan's not nobody to sleep on either, because he's just getting better and better over time.
It'd be another good fight, I think, between those guys.
Let's finish talk about this main card. Ovince St. Preux defeating Alonzo Minifield second round KO with the Wakanda Forever knockout. Alonzo looked good getting off the bus, for real, but that ain't going to do it. Ovince St. Preux had the man lined up. Because I'm not going to lie. I had Alonzo Minifield knocking OSP out. That was obviously a bad pick.
Fair.
But when you look at Alonzo Minifield, you see how OSP performs sometimes. He's a slow fighter as well. Like, even when you're watching him fight against Alonzo, but he was just defensive enough and just rangy enough every time Alonzo wanted to hit him with anything powerful. He would, like, slip just out of range. And, man, when he with that fucking counter shot when Alonzo stepped in on him, it was just beautiful. He just deaded him. It looked like he got sniped, and he's just like feeling death. It was ridiculous.
Floyd made that punch famous, man. That check left hook. Always nasty.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to OSP for recognizing too that he had knocked him the fuck out and just didn't.
Yeah, he didn't even try to do anything to him. No,
And he sounds like face first. It's a wrap. You don't even have to do nothing. Face first, it's a wrap.
Yeah, it was. It looked rough. I missed that fight, but I saw the highlights, and it just.
It was a good fight.
Yeah,
he was tearing him up with leg kicks. And,
yeah, there was a lot of body kicks, a lot of teeps, leg kicks, a lot of stuff at range, kicks at range, and Alonzo never really got off. Honestly, he would try, but he couldn't make anything happen.
And Alonzo's, I think, his last fight was by KO, right? He won with the KO?
I believe so, yes.
I'm trying to remember who he fought. But I know he had a pretty impressive win in his last fight, so...
He didn't fight... He didn't fight...
I think so, yeah.
Who fought Jan...
Blackwood?
Gian Vellante. Who fought Gian Vellante?
Maurice Green.
Okay.
Terrible submission from the bottom that was planned.
Yeah, that was horrible. Okay. It's horrible. That's set up. But Alonzo Minifield is legit. But I think even when you saw him in the cage together, because like when you see Alonzo Minifield, he's menacing. Like he's super buff, like swole as shit. But
yeah,
I don't know if I thought he was bigger than he was, but I know when he was in the cage with OSP, OSP made him look little, even though he was like bulkier. Like maybe I just forgot how big OSP was. But OSP just kept it at range the entire time. Alonzo Minifield couldn't do anything with it. It was impressive to watch. Even if OSP worked it slowly, but he was also safe the entire time. So
I consider OSP close to the Cerrone of the light heavyweight division because he's been around for so long, and he's been on the receiving end of good and bad knockouts.
I would almost say that, but I still wouldn't hold. I can't hold OSP at that same regard that I hold Cowboy, even if that's maybe not fair or is fair.
But think about it like this: like if I had to pull up an OSP highlight reel, he's got four,
Bonfluid,
he's got
Bonfluid,
head kick knockout, right? He knocked out Shogun.
Yeah, he's got the most finishes in light heavyweight division. Is that what they say? He's legit. Right.
Oh, Menafield, it looks like lost his last fight. Damn.
Oh, wow.
I've seen. Yeah, he lost to. He knocked out Paul Craig. That's who it was.
Oh, okay.
But then he lost his fight after that to Clark.
Devin Clark.
I missed that fight.
Yeah, I think it's John Jones' training partner, as they keep saying every time he fights, or sparring partner or something.
It looks like he
John fought. Jones sparring partner.
He fought. He lost. Actually, no, I'm sorry. And he lost to Clark. No, he did win his last fight. He lost to Clark on June 6th. Then he fought Craig. The way they have it on the UFC
It's a weird setup.
Yeah, it's a weird setup. But he fought, and within what? That's 3 weeks. He took another fight, and that's when he ended up knocking out Paul Craig, the Scotsman.
Yeah.
So but good
Craig
for him. And then
Craig, not a stand-up fighter either, though.
No. He's a ground guy, ain't he?
Yeah, he's mostly submissions.
I mean, this dude's fought. Oh no, that was 2019. Yo, I'm losing my mind, bro. I'm sorry. Right.
We're gonna move past that.
Right.
That's the residual of yesterday, huh?
I have a question for you fellas. Yes. To completely change the subject off of the fight card. Chimaev or Chimaev is gonna try to take another two fights within a month.
Yeah.
One against top 15 GM3. Against a legend in Demian Maia. Yeah. I think his stock goes up just for even trying that.
Yeah,
and I think it's nuts. Yeah. Mearsharp's no slouch, and he's got like four times his fights.
Right.
Yeah. And Maia. I think that will be a striking test, to be honest.
No way. He's going to take Maia down for sure.
Sorry about that, guys.
That was the steamroller called me. He just landed in Vegas.
Prevola.
I was chopping up with him real quick. I'm going to see him tomorrow.
All right. Y'all get some good work in.
Yeah. Yeah, get some work. Get the TI up.
So right. Mikey just actually mentioned something a little off topic of the card, but the news on Chimaev of him getting booked for two fights, one which is
Gerald Mearshart and Damian Maia on Fight Island. Afterwards.
Gerald Mearshart's good, dude. You can't sleep on him.
He's pretty well rounded as well. He's got decent striking and good submissions.
And now he's gonna be pissed that the UFC is like looking past him. Yep. You know, I don't know if you saw, like he said, like something to the extent of that. He was like,
"Am I a joke to you?"
Am I a joke to you?
Yeah. He posted the meme that somebody else posted. That shit's funny, but he's right too.
That's a really cool Joker line they put in the new movie. Just saying.
Yeah.
Do they? And I mean, does that? Right, you would think the pressure is going to be on Chimaev, right, to perform. Is there? Do you think there's a little bit of pressure also on? I'm sorry, this gentleman's name again. What's his name?
Gerald Mearshart.
Gerald. Gerald. It will be. Do you think that maybe there's a little bit of pressure on his end to perform because they're looking past him, and you know, because he needs to show up and show that I'm not a slouch that you're just gonna
I do feel like the pressure is more on Mearshart than Khamzat, because Khamzat would have been willing to fight anybody. Khamzat, in my opinion, would have been willing to fight anybody. He don't give a shit. I promise you. He would have fought anyone. He called out Cowboy, Maia, I think Kiesa. He called out a few people. Yep. So he didn't care who he fought. He was ready to go again. Obviously, he had the visa issues. Dana helps him fix it. Obviously, if he loses, you still book him against Maia, maybe. I don't know where Maia is at. I don't know where Maia is at in the rankings. But that being said, you don't want to be the guy
Hold on, this is my home.
Wait. I gotta move you over on the screens.
That's my home.
Listeners out there, Mikey's showing off his face mask. That's why he's as muffled as he is right now.
Is he talking?
It's a beautiful thing. The mouth is covered. It's just a beautiful thing.
Gotta get 24 hours. I'm thinking this guy's gonna have to have the just kind of the performance. Like he's gonna have to show up and perform against Chimaev, so that way there isn't reason for him to be looked at.
Yeah. Well, like if he beats Chimaev, then you could take a lot of Chimaev. Steve Chimaev. He has just like murdered social media, not even on his own, but because of the hype behind him. Like he gained about 400,000 followers, if not 350, something like that. It's ridiculous. Just off the last fights, the two fights together, and he's not even really talking like that. Like he had a little back and forth a little bit with Conor in the beginning, and it wasn't really back and forth. It was more just on his side, but If Gerald can beat him, it would be good for Gerald. It would be good for Maia, but I still don't know where Maya's at right now. So like, it wouldn't really matter as much if Maia beat him, because I would assume that Maia would just submit him when he took him down. If he took him down, But I think it would be much better if Jericho could beat him.
I just think there's more pressure on Chimaev just because
you want to live up to that hype like O'Malley and whoever else. Yeah. You've
been talking all this trash, so if you lose, it's going to look bad on you. And then for Meerschaert, to me, like, for Meerschaert, like, if everybody assumes he's going to lose and the UFC's thinking he's going to lose, you don't have – it's a win-win for you. You go out there and you smash – I shouldn't say win-win. You definitely
if you get smashed.
But if you get smashed, it's like, okay, like, people expected that. Thought you were going to get smashed anyway. But if he wins, then he just, like, upset the new up-and-comer, and everybody's going to be like, oh, who's this Meerschaert cat that, like,
destroyed the Russian, here.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I'm curious to see what the betting line's going to be on him. And
it'll be Chimaev's
going to be. It'll be like at least minus 500, but if not more, maybe in the thousand. Honestly, because of the hype, I'm looking at like probably 800 to minus 800 to 1,000.
You also think about the fact that you know, the UFC is now investing in Chimaev. It's not that they didn't even do that with Sean O'Malley, where they didn't book Sean O'Malley for two fights. They're booking this dude for two because, granted,
he's trying to keep his. That's supposed to be his thing, right?
Yes, I fight
continually, and I'll fight next day. Like, that's his thing now.
But it's pretty crazy that he's about that. You would think that might be somewhat of a liability for him. Of like, let's say people might not want to watch his next fight, or whatever the case is. If he does, if Chimaev were to lose, like maybe Maya isn't going to be as interesting, or they probably don't even book Maya because Maya's going to be ranked.
Right.
So I mean, they're kind of investing, I think, more than normal, right? More than any other fighter that I've noticed. Like,
how
much time in between these fights?
A month, I think. It would be September, and then next
month. He fought twice in 2 weeks.
So,
which is crazy.
I don't know, but I know that right now, when you got that energy behind you or whatever.
The hype train?
Not hype.
The momentum?
Yes, all the momentum is behind Khamzat right now. So if he can rally off two more wins within a month time span, like, man's going to be ready to take over the world, like, after those two fights. And I know people are going to hate it or whatever because he beat two random guys, and then you would beat Meerschaert, who everybody, you know, any hardcore would know that Meerschaert's a legit, you know, competitor. And then you beat Maya, who is a legend, but people obviously might try to call him washed up and stuff like that, which obviously Maya is probably towards the end of his career, but he's still a legit threat on the ground to anyone. But if he can get both two more wins in a month time, like,
fight for
the belt at the end of the year.
How old is he?
Khamzat? I want to say he was 27 last time I looked. But
Stone is, I think, late 20s.
Dana likes that. Dana likes young fighters who are hungry.
And people who want to fight, too.
They can talk. They can talk trash. You know, I would say like the best is talking trash, but
he has
the whole Russian thing going for him,
mm-hmm.
so it kind of like does the work for itself.
Yeah,
trying to say names with a Russian accent and it sounds gangster, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I think, you know, if he closes out the year with these two wins, I mean, you know, sky's the limit for this guy. He's going to be able to kind of call his shot and progression.
Now, does he take time? Does he take time if he? If he gets past Meerschaert, then he beats Maya. Does he wait for like an 8 week camp for his next fight, or does he just keep doing what he's doing?
If he blows them out, I could see him fighting again in December.
True.
If he blows them out, he would have to blow them out like he blew the other guys out, like no shots taken.
But if he has a tough fight with Damian Maia,
the one thing I'll say is if he has a tough fight with Maia, obviously I feel like that'll be a grappling tough. It wouldn't be on the feet tough, so he'd still be okay
to fight again. Take as much damage.
Now Meerschaert, he's going to be one that's going to be trying to stuff the takedowns a little bit more and probably do more damage because you know he's a younger fighter as well. But but if he can you know walk through both of those fights without taking too much damage like he did his first two fights. And I definitely see him trying to squeeze another one in because he's that, he just seems like that kind of guy.
Now, Alon, if you were on the receiving end of some of a booking like this, would you be slighted in some type of way if you're like
wow, if I was the vet?
If you were Jared Mearshart?
Like, would you feel slighted? Like, wow, the UFC really thinks this guy's going to run through me and give him another fight? Like, would you feel slighted?
Not really, because I feel like it would just be, like, you already know how the UFC works. Like, right. I know what Dana's doing. I know that this kid put himself in that position, you know, to work his way up faster than most people. There's a lot of guys out there that can do exactly what he just did. But they're not charismatic, and they don't talk as much trash as he does.
Or their team ain't going to let them take another fight back to back.
Right. They're going to be like, bro, you need to chill out. But he's about that life. His team's about that life. He has just the perfect concoction of elements to make the hype train behind him. So for 100%. Me, I'd just be like, all right, I know what the UFC's doing. I know what he's doing. I'd be like, I should go out there and fuck this kid up. And show him that he's not all that. He's not all that. Like, he ain't all that shit. I wouldn't really take it personally. It's really just the UFC giving him what he wants because he's asking for it. That's what Dana tells you, right? He tells you, that's what guys don't understand the UFC. Like, I know you're not supposed to, like, look past your current fighter, but it's always a good thing to have a name or two in mind because they don't care about you. You know, whenever they ask you in the post-fight press conference, who would you like to see next? Who would you like to fight next? You have an idea. And fighters say, anybody, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'll fight anybody. You know, oh, whoever the UFC wants. They don't want to hear that. They want to hear you make matchups. They want to say, you know, I want to fight Yancy Medeiros, you know, and let them know where and when. There's a fight October 25th in Vegas. I want to fight Yancy. That's what I want to do. Because you know what? Then the matchmaker, Sean Shelby, all they got to do is say, okay, is Yancy open that day?
Yeah, I don't even have to work. Yeah, I don't have to work for it.
Do I have a spot for that fight on there? Okay, perfect. Let me hit up Yancy and see what he wants to do. Yancy says yes, that's a fight made. That's how they want it to do, because then if you don't say anything, now it's just like, all right, Alon says he wants to fight somebody. It doesn't matter who. He didn't tell us when. So let me see what I have in my schedule. Let me see who's available, who's not fighting. Now I got to match him up with someone who's not, like, way over him or way below him. That's a lot of work. And Chimaev is doing all the work for them.
Yeah.
He's ready to fight as soon as possible against the people he's named out.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to make it easy on the UFC. That's what they want.
100%.
Smart on him.
Wouldn't you rather have a fight lined up for you where you called a guy out? Now that's a headline clip. Like, oh, Alon Cruz called out such and such. Now they're booked for such and such and such. Play that clip that he played after he won his fight. Bam. Like, it's easy work. It's all sets up itself.
Promo.
And also, you get to choose
who you fight.
Career path.
100%. Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, if they say, you know, hey, man, we got Islam Makhachev. Do you want that fight? You're like, fuck, man, that's a tough fight. I guess. I mean, I'm in the UFC. I have to fight anybody, right?
Right.
As opposed to me being like I said, like, you know, I want Yancy, you know? And in my mind, I'm thinking, like, oh, he's on a 3-5 losing streak. You know, he seems like he's on the decline. I think I match up well with him. You want to pick the fights that match well with you. So if you put that name out there, you're choosing literally who you get to fight. Right. Unless the person that you called out doesn't accept the fight.
Right.
Or doesn't have a fight scheduled, there really should be no reason that it doesn't happen, right?
Yeah, especially if it's a reasonable call-out.
If it's a reason, you're not going to call out top 15, top 10.
Right.
But if you call somebody who's number 30-something, you can jump way ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, you saw a little bit of that with Paella, you know, calling out Masvidal, even though obviously that's not going to happen.
Yeah, but obviously he went too high.
But more likely than not, they might look at it like, all right, he's reaching for the stars, maybe we give him a
top 5 or top 10, you know,
somebody. So even then, I mean, I think Alon, you hit it on the head of like kind of picking your kind of the path that you want to take
your career path,
right? You know who, you know what your next job is going to be if you know who you want to fight. If you leave it up to, you know, the guys, you know, the head execs or whoever, the you know, Shelby and all these guys, the matchmakers, it's going to take forever to kind of comb through all these fighters and figure out what's going to be best for them. So it's pretty crazy how nowadays, you know, and I guess maybe always, right, in the fight game, people kind of call. I mean, I guess that's the difference, though, in like boxing and MMA. You see more guys call people out in MMA than I feel like in boxing.
Maybe from people. They're like, so, yeah, you want to fight Tyson Fury next? And they're like, you know, I want to think about it with manager.
I'm going to fight this random guy that's 13-0 with a lot of knockouts, but nobody knows. Got the Anderson Silva fight. Exactly.
You suck. You know,
absolutely suck.
That's a clip that they can take, and they want you to say stuff like that.
It's eternal, too, though. Like, that goes forever. Yeah, that lasts forever.
We've seen the downfalls of that too, in like Ben Askren, unfortunately.
But that's,
and even Sean O'Malley just now.
It's a risk versus reward. Do you want the reward or not? You know what I mean?
Now everybody wants to see you fight. They're invested in watching you either win and talk the talk and walk the walk, or they want to see you lose because you're going out there saying this stuff. They're gonna watch you, and your stock goes up. Yeah. You know.
Yep, you're right.
I don't call out anybody because I'm most likely going to lose unless it's Mikey. I can take you, Mikey. One-on-one, Call of Duty. Let's make it happen.
1v1.
Yeah,
well, let's get back to the card because that's where
we'll finish up with that main event.
Yeah. Overeem, right? Overeem and
fifth round TKO of Augusto Sakai.
Augusto, not the ghost from Ghost of Tsushima. This dude became a ghost though by the end of this fight. My goodness.
I didn't really get to watch too much, but how was his clinch work? Because I know he's like a Muay Thai, I think, or kickboxer guy.
I don't feel like he ever really got clinched as much. Go ahead.
Well, I thought he did good in the first two rounds because he clearly won the first rounds in bunches.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like towards like that round, it was round three, Overeem just started kind of taking his time on the inside. He took him down in four and split him open, like viciously split him open with a couple hammer fists that looked like they caused a cut like on the eyelid and then like right here.
And that
seemed to really bother him in round five. Like, it seemed like he was more concerned about the cut than over himself. And
I was going to say, once Overeem knew he'd take him down at will, which Overeem should have already knew this, but what are you going to do? Once he realized he could take him down at will and control him on the ground, it was a wrap.
Right.
He's like, cool, we're doing ground game shit. What you would think he would be more... He would do more because he's got more finishes on the ground than I think he does on the feet. Like he's a legit on the ground monster. But I'm glad he's
coming out, man.
Yeah,
it's that old one because it's like, man.
I know. You get used to kickboxing, but you're not. He can't take a shot like he used to, so I feel like he should start utilizing the ground more. Obviously, because once he took it to the ground, it was like completely one sided.
Yeah. I told Alon, it almost seemed like he felt bad, but now that I look back at it, he maybe almost seems disappointed, like he can't finish people standing up anymore.
Yeah, 100%.
I got to take him on the ground to finish this, but I got to win the fight. That's what he does.
He does, regrettable ground tricks.
Yeah.
People sleep on over him, because he's older and,
Chinnier.
I can't say he's on the decline just because.
He's still legit. He's still legit.
People fall for his. He plays possum in a lot of his fights, right? Mm-hmm. He covers up on the cage and he eats a big flurry, and it looks like he's getting hurt. Sometimes when I'm watching the refs, I'm like, don't jump in. Like, it's just his game.
He would never hurt, right?
Because Augusto, I'm sure Augusto's seen his fights. He must have known that that's his strategy. Because he would go in there, but he was throwing 100% trying to hurt Overeem, which he wasn't. And then Overeem would grab him, clinch him, start working knees to the body.
He seemed deflated.
Body shots.
He seemed deflated when he kind of saw the Overeem was still there in front of him. He seemed really deflated.
My biggest issue with Sakai was no not enough uppercuts. So like Overeem would like show up like this, like and try to like block all the outside shots. When you know he's gonna show up, and he did it for the whole fight. So like when you know he's gonna show up, boom, 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 and then just bring that shit straight up through the middle, like bring it because you know he's gonna show just like that. And he never threw it one time, and he clipped him good. Mm-hmm. Only time he threw it though, and I was like, why would you? I'm not saying none of the stuff he was. Yeah, I'm not saying none of the stuff he was throwing was landing. I just wish he would throw more uppercuts because I feel like he could have got him out. If you're gonna shell, then I might as well uppercut you because all the other shit was landing. Oh, yeah. Right. But like, I just wish he was throwing the same combo over and over again. And I'm like, why would you keep? You did that. You did that in the whole first round, bro. Like, switch it up. Like, hit some other shit. But
that could be his training. Then you know, sometimes 100%. If that's all you train, like,
if it's drilled. Yeah, if it's drilled into you,
you're not going to think, oh, let me go uppercut to the body. Yeah. Like, if you've never thrown a combo before, that would seem like something that would be a good, like a Tyson combo. One combo that we throw out here is it's called a Tyson. And it's jab, rear hook to the body, rear uppercut, reload, liver, head, and then uppercut, hook, cross. You would never think to switch body, head, or head, body, head, if you've never done that before. You should go something basic, straight cross, or straight hook, straight.
Yeah.
That's the most basic thing you can throw.
Yeah.
I mean, and look like Overeem, once he had him down too, and just kind of felt kind of him kind of deplete, where he just started raining those elbows on him too to just make sure he finished. And It was funny because I was listening to, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but Big John had mentioned if there's one thing, which I guess Alon, I'm sure maybe you know, and if you don't know, well, here you go. Big John was saying one of the best, most effective things to like close out a fight to make sure that you kind of get the stoppage if you're doing like some lethal ground and pound is to drop elbows. He's like, he was saying nothing makes a referee more nervous than elbows because of the fact that just the amount of damage that they're taking. Especially if they're laying too flat, because that's the worst thing to do, right? If you're not giving your neck any give when you get hit, you're just gonna get all that blunt force of whatever that heavyweight at that, you know, in this particular fight is bringing down. So I thought it was pretty interesting, kind of, you know, hearing that and hearing just knowing that like some of these fighters IQ wise kind of realize some of these things, like shit, if I want to put them away, I just need to rein down kind of the worst. And right now, my elbows are the worst thing that I could possibly.
So, Josh, check this out. So, Alon, I'm a toot Alon's horn, which I told Mikey not to. I'm a toot Alon's horn a little bit. Mike, Alon had lost. He had been off for what, almost 2 years when you fought Damon.
Yeah.
Alon comes back, and his first fight, I believe, was here in Tampa for RFC, and he fought this kid. I can't remember what his name was. And
Bruno Alonso.
Yeah, Alon just went back to his roots, which is his ground and pound. And sure enough, he split this kid open by dropping elbows and ground and pound. And there was so much blood. You know, the kid was just sitting on the ground at the end of the round one, and they called a fight. I guess he is absolutely right. Whether that kid could have continued or not, like that visual, it
was enough.
Alon, you look like you got like those Tony Ferguson elbows. You got like a little bit of that lean. Look, like you just fucked some people up with some nasty elbows.
One of his teammates, Gian, was really good at slicing people with elbows. Really elbows. And it just seemed like, I remember that fight when I watched Alon's fight live, I was like, man, that reminds me of something that Gian would do. You hit it with the perfect elbow.
Is that something you prefer, Alon, especially on the ground? Like when you're
elbows?
Right? Well,
I don't know, dude. I never forget. I was just telling Aljamain. I gave Aljamain a ride to
the game
yesterday. And I was telling him, we were talking about his old fights. And I was telling him how, like, I never forget, like, in my pro debut, I threw so many elbows. I don't know if Lindell was there or not. Lindell, were you there for my pro debut? He's gone.
Against Brad?
Yeah. Okay, well, I threw so many elbows in that fight. I had giant, like, sacks underneath my elbows on both of them, like from bruising.
Yeah.
And he was cut. I mean, he was cut on his head, his nose, his lip, his chin. I had white shorts on. They were red by the end of the fight. There was blood everywhere. And I love throwing elbows, but I said I'll never throw that many elbows in a fight ever again because it hurts. It hurts in the fight. Like, you feel it. I mean, you're hitting basically concrete. You're hitting somebody's skull, and it feels like concrete. So, you know, as much as I love elbows, they're cool in, like, you know, smaller numbers. I'd rather be punching somebody in the face and then drop some, like, really nasty elbows. But I definitely love cutting people open. You know, the smell of blood doesn't...
that doesn't sound crazy at all.
It invigorates you a different way. That's why you gotta fight.
The ones that Overeem landed, though, they were, like, perfect because they were, like, borderline flush and glancing blows. So they were, like, that perfect slicing angle. Mm-hmm. Which is why I think Sakai was a little frustrated because he's probably thinking, I'm okay. But once again, the visual of him bleeding all over the place.
Yeah, because he got up immediately. Yeah, like and angry and everything. Yep. But when you're getting like bringing it, and the close up shots I saw, some of the like good shots they had of it, it looked terrible.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, he definitely freaked out with the blood because you could see, like, as soon as Alistair put him open the first time and a little bit trickled in his eye, he kept checking, even though Alice was like
messing with it.
The immediate threat is Alistair right now, not the blood going to your eye, but he just kept messing with the cut. So he was definitely worried about that. Probably for good reason, but you know.
So with this win, do we think, I mean, most likely this is Overeem's last potential title run if he can gather up some more wins, right?
I said one final run.
He's what?
He said one final run.
One final run, right? So, I mean, how many fights do you think he needs before he can actually contend for a title again?
Two
more? Okay.
Yeah.
Who do you think would have to be those fighters?
He called out Rozenstruik?
He did?
I know Cormier's not coming back. I know he only wants to fight for the belt. But I'm just saying it would be great for him if Cormier did come back. He was able to get that fight.
Him?
That would be a huge legend fight too. Honestly,
yeah.
Considering because they've never even fought each other. He called out Rozenstruik. He said, "I was beating him the entire time. I'll do it again." I still think if John Jones steps over Francis, I can see Alistair trying to get redemption over Francis. I'm not gonna lie, Alistair type of guy, and I know everybody else would be like, "You're crazy. He'll kill you." But Alistair seems like the type of guy, like, he's learned. Every time he's lost, he's learned. He goes to a new gym. He picks up new tricks. He starts doing new... And this, it's the one thing that I love, truly, about Alistair Overeem. It is a humbleness to it, because there's so many guys who refuse to evolve. They refuse to change gyms. They refuse to get different looks. And it drives me crazy. But Alistair has gotten better every loss. He's always changing something. If something else isn't working, fuck it. Let's go over here and see what they got going on. That's not working. Okay, let's go over here and see what they got. I lose to this guy. Yeah, I'm gonna go train with that guy. He's gonna help me get better. Yeah. Even Gaethje. I think Gaethje worked with him a little bit. He said because he was rooting for him as well. Obviously, same gym as well. But I could see him and Francis. If Francis gets stepped over by John Jones, he also introduced the idea of fighting John Jones if John Jones wants to come to light heavyweight. They've sparred together before when they both were training at Greg Jackson. They didn't really leave on good terms either, I believe, because I believe Overeem had to fight, I want to say it was Arlovsky, but something happened there where there was some beef whenever he separated from Greg Jackson a little bit with him and John Jones. So, I mean, I'd be okay with that fight as well.
Yeah,
No. He said he wanted to fight Jones. Wanted to fight. Alistair wants to fight John Jones, and he called out Rozenstruik. And then also, I think Alistair would want to fight Francis just to prove it to himself.
Yeah, and depending on if Francis, let's say, wins his Stipe fight, he could potentially be the champion. So he might, if he's trying to get that belt, he would. Most likely need to go through.
Yeah, but I'm more so trying to figure out how they're going to do Stipe. Like, is Stipe going to fight John Jones? If he is, you could do Alistair Francis again. Many people might, you know, try to play it down. But, I mean, Alistair's ranked sixth right now.
But I think Francis is going to fight Stipe, though. You think Jones is going to get the fight over? I I'm pretty sure they're gonna book that fight before Jones does. And I don't think Jones wants to fight Alistair. unless he's fighting either the number one contender or I don't think he wants to fight in heavyweight unless he's fighting the number one contender or the champion.
What about Derrick Lewis?
Huh?
Derrick Lewis is fighting Blades.
Mm.
If I'm UFC, I'm doing everything I can to make it John Jones versus Stipe. I'm doing everything I can to get that fight booked, fans or no fans. That's you can make that fight happen, pay-per-view records possibly.
I would do Stipe Francis first, and then you do Francis Jones. Because I want to see John Jones fight Francis Ngannou.
Yeah. And honestly, they could do that fight depending, but even if Francis loses, let's say, he could still fight John Jones for that.
Yeah, but at that point,
let's say Stipe, either way, they would have some exciting fights. I think Overeem's going to have to, he's definitely going to have to go through Rozenstruik most likely, and then.
I think that's the only other person who's not booked that really would be ahead of him. Yeah, so. It's either Rozenstruik, Francis, if Stipe fights John, John, if Stipe fights Francis. But those are really his only three options as of now, unless he decides to fight down.
Yeah.
I think he would, like I said, I think you get Stipe and John Jones, and then winner of that faces. If it's John Jones, then you get your Francis fight, and you have that much more build up because now it could possibly be for a title. I mean, I guess either way, it could be for a title, but.
Yeah.
But if you do Stipe and Ngannou first, then you've got your rematch, uh-huh. right? So you've got Stipe and Ngannou too, which that's going to be big because you have the whole storyline from the first fight.
And then,
if Ngannou wins, then he got his redemption, and then now you've got the super fight with Ngannou and John Jones.
Uh-huh.
And then if Stipe wins, then he's still the greatest heavyweight fighting against
the greatest light heavyweight.
Yeah. But if you do John Jones and Stipe first, then there's a possibility that you won't get Ngannou and Stipe too. I think you want that fight.
You want both fights.
So you do Ngannou Stipe, and then John Jones gets the winner. Either way, it's going to be a huge fight between the both of them.
Honestly,
whoever gets John Jones.
Now that 100%. I think about it, it would be a great starter fight for John Jones if you were to fight Overeem. If that was his first fight in the heavyweight division, was Overeem. That would be a good kind of stepping stone for him to kind of make a mark without him necessarily fighting Francis or Stipe first, even though we know that those fights will happen. If, let's say, he wants to fight in the heavyweight division to not just be inactive, I think that would be a great little kind of, not to hate to say warm up fight, but starter fight for him in the heavyweight division.
Well, I know Jones has made it clear that he's cool with waiting. Jones made it clear that he's cool with waiting until he gets the title fight too, as well. So he might not fight anyone.
That's what I figured.
He might not fight anyone.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I figured. I figured he was only going to fight for either titles or number one contenders. But I mean, figured if he wanted to have at least one fight, Overeem would probably be the best guy for him to kind of start off against. What else do we have? Well, we covered the card. What's the next card? We have like two cards coming up before, I think, the Adesanya fight. Right?
Oh, yeah.
I think fight Angela 17. Hill, Michelle Watterson, right?
That's a tough card, bro.
Kyle Nelson.
And then Matt Favola and Roosevelt Roberts.
Is that all on the same card?
That's the same card.
Okay.
All right.
Well, at least we got some good fights on there, but that's a tough card.
The next fight, September 19th, you have Colby Woodley.
Okay, so that'll pick the steam back up. That's when the heat will come in.
Yep. That'll be. And who else is bro? That's crazy that's like a fight night.
Yeah, like, I know.
It's a fight night.
I like Colby in that one too.
And Brian Ortega, a Korean Zombie, is that a pay per view? Is that going to be a fight night? I think it's a fight night also, right? Main event.
That's not official. Yeah, is it official? It is official.
I thought it was. Yeah, I thought
it was.
On pay-per-view.
Which pay-per-view? What pay-per-view? 250?
I thought it was 250.
Yeah, Korean Zombie. No, you said Brian Ortega and
Korean Zombie. Yeah.
It's October 17th. It's a fight night main event.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
Where on Fight Island or in Vegas?
It does not say on Google.
What was the date?
October 17th.
That might be Fight Island.
Jocko and Muradov is the co-main event for that fight.
Or Jocko.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, we got some good cards, man. Yeah, I mean, how long has it been since
October 3rd?
How long has it been since Brian Ortega fought?
The last time we fought Max Holloway, like a year and change. Year and some change. Year and a half, maybe?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Lose one fight, lose your mind, bro. Like, don't know what to do.
Bro, it's that Modelo commercial, bro. You can't be doing that commercial.
No, it's because he got so popular ahead of it, I believe, too. Like, the Halle Berry stuff and all that other stuff. And I'm not saying it got to his head or anything like that, but it's weird. I've never seen somebody lose a fight and then be just gone. Because I don't know that he had any injuries that kept him out this long, to be honest.
No.
And I don't know who can just sit this long and still have a buzz for themselves. Right. Like, it's crazy.
I want to say this. You know what? In a weird way, the pandemic has been like one of the best things to happen to the UFC because you can ask a lot. I've always kind of enjoyed boxing more than MMA. Boxing has been a complete afterthought since like all of this happened, which is like the perfect push that MMA like finally needs to really like start making they already had $1 million fights with whenever Conor fights or Nate Diaz. Mm-hmm. Now, all these guys are killing it on these cards. It's been unbelievable. Like I've been seeing multiple videos on YouTube with people saying that they don't even normally watch all of the fight night, and now it's like must see TV. And so yeah, I know I've watched more MMA right now than I have in the last 2 or 3 years.
Ain't nothing else to watch. Sure. You want to watch some basketball with some fucking monitors in
the stadium? Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, I'm watching the Lakers right now. I'm watching LeBron. I know. I need
to throw it. No, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there's certain sports that's just like, it ain't hitting the same anymore. But MMA still feels just about the same, honestly, with the crowds being gone.
I mean, you think about it too, right? Once UFC inked that deal with ESPN, it really changed the game for them. I mean, just accessibility-wise.
Yeah, I love ESPN Plus.
Oh, of course. And, like, I need to get it. I don't have it, but I...
Yeah. $5. Get the...
Well, I'm sorry?
I was going to say get the combo with Disney Plus and Hulu.
With Disney Plus, yeah.
It's the best.
I think Fox would have did just as good of a job, but, you know, nobody could have predicted that a pandemic was going to happen. But I actually think Fox Sports 1... would have probably did just as good of a job as ESPN has. It's just the timing.
I think whoever set up that ESPN app as well. Obviously, it had its issues in the beginning, but like to me, it was better than Fight Pass when Fight Pass came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it.
And all the stuff is playing, so it's play smooth. You can stream it anywhere.
ESPN Plus and the ESPN app, like the first 4 to 5 years, oh my God, because I'm a Miami Hurricane fan. Mm-hmm. So I would try to watch the Miami games. It was such trash. Like you would have to turn on your location, but then it would give you blackouts. It's like, I'm in Tampa. How is Miami a blackout game for me? But now it's kind of ironed out a lot of those issues.
Well, luckily with this pandemic, too, I mean, you know, it was the only sport that was on. So, like, everybody was kind of jonesing to watch something. And sure enough,
I was turning into a crackhead. I'm not even going to lie. I'm like, I need something to watch, bro. Ain't nobody else. I think it was only, like, a couple months that fights weren't on for, it felt like, I think. And I was fucking losing it. I was losing it. I was like, shit, I didn't know I needed fights in my life like this. But I knew. Like,
when was the last fight before everything shut down?
January. I believe it was Oliveira in Brazil, but I don't know. I'm just guessing. That was the last fight I remembered right before COVID stuff happened.
I was on one
of the last
cards. I think it was on like one or two more cards after my fight.
Okay.
And then it closed down.
And I mean, you know, Dana made it happen too. Shout out to him.
He did. He pushed it through. Yeah.
ESPN, Disney did shut him down for a second because they were like, hey man, hold on. Let's pump the brakes real quick. Let's give it a second. And then sure enough, though, he made it happen within, I think, it was maybe 2 weeks after that where he was like, no, it's happening. It's just, you know.
They must be happy about it now. The numbers are like, we should have did this in the beginning.
Remember the deal that they signed with ESPN? He has to have a certain amount of fights. So I know he was probably like, listen, contractually, I'm obligated for these fights. If you guys shut me down, then you guys are withholding me from doing my job. Right.
Complete my obligation.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm sure they were probably like, listen, all right, we can't let him we can't let him get out of this contract or whatever, figure out whatever loophole. Let's let him have these fights if he can do it safely. And they have, man. I mean, even with the people that have popped COVID and have, you know, they've taken out fights, they've made new fights. And if they can't, then, you know, the card's shorter, but the card's still happening.
OSP just had COVID August 22nd. They pulled his fight. And now, you know, less than a month later, you know, he has a highlight knockout. So,
yeah.
So did Glover and Santos get taken off of the card?
They got moved. Yes, they got moved to another card, I believe, in October.
Okay.
Got a lawn getting iced over here, guys.
That's just so you know, he's breaking some shit. chill out, bro.
I was going to say something, and I completely forgot what it was.
All that glass breaking.
Dang. I was trying to find the rest of the card for next week because I'm only seeing Angela Hill, Watterson, and then Carrabba's, and I'm sorry, Billy Q.
Carrabba's.
Hey, you got me hungry, bro. Carrabba's, in case y'all didn't know.
Yeah, all right.
Over here, over in Tampa, he used to work.
I've never been.
Carrabba's good.
Carrabba's?
What? I've never been. You've never had the oil with the little herbs in it? Little marijuana in it? Oh, my goodness.
Little marijuana?
Little herbs in it. I don't even smoke, but those herbs have to have a little some marijuana or something. Anyways, yeah. All right,
I have announced bouts for the car, but I don't have the full lineup.
And Billy's on the main card now, too.
Yeah, Billy Quarantine versus Kyle Nelson. But the other announced bouts, this is not in order because I'm not sure how they're going to play this out. And obviously, with the potential of losing fights to COVID next week as well. So, though I will say I don't see any Brazilians on here. Okay, we do got one, but they're the ones you got to worry for because it just feels like they're the ones that's popping a lot, it seems like. Even though obviously it's not exclusive. Yeah, but Florida people don't know how to stay inside. Women's flyweight bout with Roxanne Modafari and Andrea Lee, which is awesome because it's a rematch from Invicta. Nice. They fought in Invicta. It was a good fight then, too. You have Matt Schnell versus Tyson Nam. Tyson Nam is a vet and making a comeback. And then you have Tagir Ulanbekov. Nailed it. Versus Bruno Gustavo da Silva. You have a lightweight bout between Frank the Tank Camacho and Brock Weaver.
Frank Camacho's I think.
Oh my God, he did get killed. Yeah. That was a while ago, though, right?
No, that was like 3 weeks ago.
Okay. I do remember him getting knocked out.
How's he not suspended?
I gotta watch that.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'll pull up his fights after, or like his. Hold on, I can actually pull it right now. Give me the record.
He's fighting Brock Weaver.
Right, he fought Justin James. He fought him in June 20th. So that's pretty far.
That's still not that far away. That's like a month.
Yeah,
bro, 2 months. That's almost 3 months.
No, not even.
June 20th, 2020.
Okay.
But versus Brock Weaver. I don't think Brock Weaver can knock him out, but we'll see. Brian Barberina versus Anthony Ivey. I've never seen Anthony Ivey.
I don't know Anthony Ivey.
Yeah, but obviously Barberina's legit. Yeah. You already know Roosevelt Roberts versus Matt Frivola. I like both guys. I know Frivola's your boy. You're going to be rooting hard for him. Steamroller.
I want to give everything. Well, it's kind of a nice relationship. Kind of cute.
And then you have Alon Patrick versus Bobby Green.
Alon?
Which is the Alon. Alon? Yeah. Alon Patrick? But I think it's Alon. Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. Ed Herman versus Mike Rodriguez. Sabina Mazo versus Justine Kish. Karma Worthy versus Atom Atazir. I like Karma Worthy. He's a wild dude, too. And then Sajara Eubanks versus Julia Avila.
Yo, so Sajara, she was supposed to fight yesterday.
She was,
and then her opponent had to pull out because they had to go to the hospital for weight cutting issues.
Yeah, a lot of people pulled out of the card last night.
Yeah.
I think it was like four fights. Something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mentioned this with Killer B on a podcast about, she was talking about the 1FC, time difference between the weight cut versus 1FC and UFC. How long before you think UFC adopts the weight cut method?
Of never.
They'll never adopt it. Yeah, they'll never adopt it.
Why is that?
It's too messy. It's too much.
Yeah. You're telling me like, they're trying to monitor them outside in camp. You can't tell people how to be outside in camp. Like, I get it, and it's probably safer, but it's not. It would never work over here.
And that's how the UFC's always done it.
Like, yeah, they're not going to change it. They're not going to try to be like 1FC. If they were going to do it, they would have done it first, and then everybody else would have had to be like them.
Right. Mm.
It's an ego thing.
Makes sense. I think if you have more and more stories of fighters going to the hospital with weight cut issues, I mean, the video with Cyborg kind of went viral at the time. You know, when will people actually stand up and say, hey, we need to, you know, you guys need to change?
Who's supposed to stand up? That's fighters are doing this themselves. Who's standing up?
Right. That's because she didn't have a weight class to go to. Really, she should be fighting at 50 at that time. She should have been fighting at 55, but there is no 55 pound division. So 45, it was her only choice. So she had to cut to get to it. Now, you know, for men, you know, if you're having trouble making weight, you just need to go up a weight class because we have a lot more weight classes than the women do. So really, it's not really an issue of whether the UFC needs to change the rules. You just need to go up a weight class if you can't handle it.
Choosing the right weight class.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I just wanted to tie that in.
Because you really see light heavyweights struggling to make light heavyweight, and if they were, they would just go up to heavyweight. Yeah. It's more so once you get down to the smaller weight classes and people want size advantages.
There's definitely like in-betweeners, like Kevin Lee.
Kevin
right,
Lee comes
exactly.
a lot to get to 55, but he's not that big for a welterweight.
Right. I would call him a small welterweight.
At like 65, if there was a 65. That would be like his weight class, like right around there.
Well, and Kelvin Gastelum, right? That's somebody who used to fight at 170.
But you would think that they would put a middle ground between. But you would think they would put a middle ground between 70 and 85. Like, why is their middle ground just about between every other weight class? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's.
Yeah.
There's
Kelvin,
always the.
I don't feel bad for Kelvin, though.
No. He chooses. Yeah, he just chooses not to cut weight.
He makes 70. Yeah,
he could make 70. 100%. 100%.
But no, even at 170, though, he's kind of a small guy, ain't he? Like,
I think he's an average. I would call him an average 170 size guy. He's about 6 foot.
At the PI like a week ago, it was him and Uriah Hall were in the locker room. Uriah's fucking gigantic.
Yeah.
But Kelvin's like, I don't want to say he's my height. He's definitely a little shorter, but he's maybe like 5'10", maybe 5'11", and he's thick. I mean, he's a thick dude. I mean, especially right now.
Yeah.
He looks like he's got to be at least 220, maybe, 215. Like, he's thick right now. He's like heavy.
So, well, he was sad eating.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sad eating. So. But he can fight at 70 if he really is
dedicated. I think he needs to go back down personally, but. You gotta have that motivation.
He doesn't want to hire when he was Mike Dolce, he made weight when he was Mike Dolce.
He probably just didn't like it. He didn't like it. Yeah.
Well, that and he didn't like the. He said that he didn't like the pay cut that Mike took. But it's like, dude.
Oh yeah, Mike don't play. You don't pay
him. But it's like the 20% that you lost from not making weight all those times without Mike.
Right.
That's
what's the difference?
Pay Mike and getting your win.
And that being said. I don't even think it necessarily just has to be Dolce either. Like, but you do need a nutritionist. You need you need somebody who's gonna somebody. I was thinking, was it George Grigel? He used to fight, and then he started doing. I'm thinking about somebody.
George Lockhart.
Lee. Yeah. Big weight cutting places. Yeah, but there's ways for him to do it. You just gotta be willing to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, and it looks like really there hasn't been too many issues, right, with weight cut lately. I feel like if people miss weight, they miss weight, but being hospitalized necessarily, we haven't really seen too much of it lately. It's just people either miss weight and they've Like, you've seen the people that have gotten either the late fights that just missed weight because they probably weren't properly prepared to take that fight, but they took it regardless, so they lost on the first. And I think recently they've been losing too at that. But it hasn't been an issue where they necessarily had to go to the hospital or it was like a health issue necessarily.
So well, I know the UFC has also been working with fighters. Like, you see a lot of, like, catchweight fights. Like, instead of 145, they fight at 150.
I love that.
Fivers going up to 55 for the fight.
Right.
You know,
that's
like
smart.
All of Brian Kelleher's fights right. at 145, but he's a 35er. He's just fighting other 35ers that are
and
down.
And Stam, that's Stamen's Stamen's a 35er too, and he just fought
Stamen's
with him.
35er.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Was Frankie fight a catchweight fight? Was Frankie's last fight a catchweight fight?
No, it was 35.
No.
He actually went down a weight.
Yeah. He went down a full weight. Yeah.
I feel like somebody like him or somebody who looks like him or something just had a catchweight fight and I can't remember who it was. But never mind.
Who looks like Frankie?
I'm the casual.
COVID, it's a little harder to cut weight these days.
Yeah.
Just because
well, I'm
of
sure.
the whole situation and training and, you know, whatever else.
Also, what depleting your, like, immune system to make the weight, that probably makes you more vulnerable to getting COVID as well.
Right. Yeah,
no good. Yeah. Well, and like for you, Alon, do you? I know I've heard a few fighters mention obviously when they're and we had talked about it kind of like DC, right? When he knows he wants to make weight at around 235 or 240, he'll usually sit around 245, 250 for a while, maybe, right? And then drop that weight. Where normally, if he's not fighting, he's probably at like 260, chilling,
right? Right.
Like, not giving a fuck. For you, right, you fought at 145. You said you're going up to 155 now. Are you sitting around that, like, 170, 165 range? Or do you – no, you're at, like, 180?
I haven't been there in, like, 5 or 6 years.
All right, so when you train, like, what is it – what's the weight for you, like, the golden weight that helps – that you know, like, oh, I'm going to be able to cut this weight easier if I'm sitting at this weight?
Ideally, I like to move around. Like at least 6 weeks of my camp at the weight that I'll be in the cage. So just because I get used to what my body's going to feel like at that weight, you know, with speed and the power and the weight, whatever. So normally, maybe like a year ago or two, it would be like 170. If I could walk around 170, that's usually what I walk back into the cage at. Like my last fight, I weighed in at 45. I stepped into the cage at 171, 172. So now what I'm thinking is I'm waking up around, well, I don't really know what I'm waking up around, but I know what I weigh after training. I'm like 79, maybe 80. I think when I'm like really, and I'm somewhat lean. I think when I'm like really, really lean, like deep into fight camp, I'll probably walk around 176 or so.
Okay.
175, 176. And that's probably what I'm going to walk into the cage at. So that's kind of what I've never been at 55 before, so I don't know how it's going to work out, but that's really what I'm shooting for. About 20 pounds out. 20 pounds, a little more.
Word. Nice, man. I love the fact that there's that strategy to that. And I think, obviously, you learned a lot of that, too, from, like, with your wrestling background, because you wrestled in high school, and weight cutting is a big thing, obviously, a big part of that. Yeah, man. Hats off to you, man, and all you fighters that put your body through that. Put your body on the line for our entertainment.
Eating, you know, cutting weight and doing all that stuff, I'm eating donuts and pizza and wings and enjoying my life. So
I got
full dad bod. He does it. We live vicariously through him, through Alon. Mm-hmm. That's what
I live vicariously through my friends when they eat food and stuff. When I retire, then
you get Oreos after your fight.
I'll be eating straight shit all the time. The
PI's got fire food though, right? I would assume. No.
I mean,
don't say nothing bad about the PI, because, you know, just
for healthy food.
Yeah.
That is free. And I get it every day. It tastes better than a lot of healthy foods meals that I've had before, and it does. Some of the meals are really good. Like on Friday, they had a salmon with wild rice and vegetables. I posted on Instagram. That shit was bomb. It was so good. It is healthy food, but it tastes good for healthy food. But then sometimes you'll get like some real basic shit, like chicken breasts, broccoli, and a fucking sweet potato. You know what I mean? Like, it's not fun, but it's free and it tastes better than them.
Yeah, but it does the job. Salmon
better than them?
What?
I said, could I make their salmon better than them?
I never had your salmon. I'm just saying their salmon's pretty good. Oh, you talking about that? I'm sorry. Yeah, but it's different though because my salmon had to be like. So I hired Glendale, for like the last 3 weeks of my weight cut because that 3 weeks is very crucial and very hard, and it's a set. I have like specific amounts that need to be made, and certain seasonings, and you know, Glendale knows it's really hard for me to do. When I'm training, like cooking
for
and
old lady. Cook.
Yeah.
It's like for old diabetic lady.
Yeah. So when he's cooking salmon for me, it's tough because he can't make it taste like, you know, the PI can make, put whatever the fuck they want on it because I'm not like cutting weight. So they put like pesto and they put all this crazy shit. With him, I'm like, I just need pink Himalayan salt and then you can put lemon on it or whatever else you want to do. And he made it taste really good compared to what I would make normally.
Yeah.
I never had
that skin on where it's crispy.
Well, he left the skin on there. That shit was fire. That was really good. So basically with Lindell, what I'm saying, like as far as like I haven't eaten your salmon that like if I just told you just to make salmon and make it however you want, like, you know, put whatever you want on it, that's what I'm saying. The PI can do it. But during that weight cut time, it tasted good.
I think when I start enjoying cooking again, I'm going to try to make like a salmon dip or something. I don't know.
I've had some good fish dip in some restaurants.
But I digress. All right, boys. I think did we cover it all? I think we might have.
I think so. Yeah.
We got a lot more fights to talk about in this coming couple of weeks. I mean, right after the Michelle Waterson is that Colby fight, so that'll be exciting to talk about. You're right. Right? There's three before.
Yeah. You got the Fight Night 177 September 12th, and then you got Colby Woodley the 19th, and then 253 is right there around the corner. Right after that.
Yeah, we got
so back to back to back weeks.
Yep. Good time to be a fight fan.
Oh yeah.
Good time.
Oh, yeah.
The only break is between the October 3rd card, which is Holly Holm and Irene Aldana. And then that next fight night with Ortega versus Korean Zombie. It's the third and then the 17th. There's a little bit. They might throw another card in there. We don't know. But.
Third, 17th, and then it's the 24th is a Khabib fight.
Yeah, it hasn't even come up on Google yet as far as that far ahead.
That fight's going to be, I mean.
So that's going to be 254?
Yeah.
I can imagine them putting another card in between. Because that's going to be Halloween, right?
It could.
Halloween night?
The next, the fight after that,
Halloween weekend.
Yeah. Well, we'll see, man.
There's not going to be any trick-or-treating this year, so that could be a huge, huge weekend. I can picture that card being stacked.
One, right now, we don't know where Michael Chandler is going to go either. I mean, if he could get if he could sign an agreement to one of these promotions, preferably, obviously, the UFC, it'd be great to see how quickly they try to book him if they can get him signed, obviously now or pretty soon here. If they can get him a fight with before the year ends, maybe like
Michael,
that last.
Michael Chandler with Justin Poirier.
Tony, is there anything announced for the undercard of Khabib?
254. I thought. Did they book the Poirier Ferguson for that?
No. He's been wanting that fight.
Okay.
It's unofficial. It's unofficial. But that's what everybody wants, and that's what he's thinking at. So go ahead and hook that shit up.
All right, hold on.
I'm going to pull it up I'm just going to pull it up on Wikipedia for right now. Right now, it doesn't look like all the bouts are on the card. You have Khabib versus Gaethje, obviously. Volkov versus Walt Harris, Alexander Volkov. Robert Whittaker, Jared Cannonier. That'll definitely be on the main card. Yair Rodriguez.
Did it get canceled? I thought it got canceled. I thought Yair had to pull out. Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I thought he had to pull out. Okay.
Not that I can recall. No, I think just got rebooked again. Okay.
Nice.
You got Cynthia Calvillo versus Lauren Murphy.
Okay. Speaking of, she's training out here
at Syndicate. Right,
who, Murphy?
No, Cynthia.
Oh, Cynthia, yeah. Oh, she left a. Yeah.
But she moved to Vegas, right?
She's out here currently. I don't know if she moved here. She's definitely out here for the moment.
I feel like she was. I heard something when she was leaving Cali, but I'm not sure.
Well, she's from Arizona, I think, or she was living in Arizona, but she's up here now.
Okay.
You have, I believe they said it was Khabib's cousin, Umar Nurmagomedov versus Sergey Morozov. Okay. Rafael Dos Anjos versus Islam Makhachev. Islam's gonna fuck him up.
Poor RDA, man. Can't catch a break.
Poor RDA, bro. And maybe RDA comes back and looks like RDA, bro. But you got outstruck by fucking Michael Chiesa, so I'm done talking about it. Dan Jung versus Sam Alvey. That's all the belts listed currently.
That card's already pretty stacked nicely.
Pretty done. I can see them adding about two more fights on it. Normally, the UFC card's about 12 fights.
They'll say Poirier Ferguson for.
Well, everybody wants it for a. They want it for a fight night. Because they want it to be five rounds. Because obviously it'll have to be your next fight will probably be for a title. So.
Yeah.
But that's what everybody else wants. That's what everybody else wants. I'm like, fuck that shit. Fuck that shit. Yeah. Fuck a three rounds. They'll fuck each other up for three rounds. Fuck each other.
Don't talk about Dan Hooker. When is he coming back? Is he injured?
I personally thought it should have been Dan Hooker, Charles Oliveira. I'm not sure what's going on. It'd be a fantastic fight. They both got good striking and good jiu-jitsu.
They need to let Charles Oliveira in there.
Charles already said, the top 10 to top 5 guys, they gate you out. They won't. They only fight each other, and then they won't fight anybody else. So how am I supposed to become a top-ranked guy if nobody's
got it? I don't know. They need to give him somebody. They need to let him break in there.
I want to say everybody. I saw that he got booked versus someone. Let me see.
Yeah, that'd be another show-stopping fight right there.
Oh, yeah.
Stack
and
that
they're
with
both they're almost the same height. You know, Dan Hooker's six foot?
Oh, he got booked versus Beneil Dariush on October 3rd.
I think he only
got booked versus Beneil because nobody else will fight him. Because there's no way he should be fighting Beneil. He should be fighting somebody in the top 10 to top 8. He's past Beneil. Now, that's not saying Beneil won't beat him or can't beat him. For me, Oliveira's always going to be a little bit chinny to me, even though these last like 6-7 fights he's had, he's been absolutely destroying dude. So you can take that. You can honestly take that out of there at this point.
Right.
But that would be my only. That would be his only flaw is that sometimes he gets knocked out. That's about it. Like his striking.
When he was at 45.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since he's been at 55,
yeah. Maybe he's healthier. Maybe his brain's good. A little bit healthier. But I love Oliveira. I've loved Oliveira since he first came to. I started watching Oliveira, and I think it was Holloway as well. Around the same time when they came into the UFC, and I've always loved watching Oliveira fight. He's been one of my favorite fighters for a long time, and he's still not getting the recognition he deserves just from the UFC in particular. Yep.
Yeah, hopefully he gets his the fight that he needs, man, to really propel him to that next stage. Because it sucks that you're right that he has to kind of fight under his
where he's at.
Like why isn't Oliveira fighting RDA? Like, I know RDA technically wouldn't be ranked coming in, but he's a former champion. It would have been a big name for somebody like Oliveira. He hasn't gotten to fight any big names. Why is Islam? And don't get me wrong. I promise you, people don't want to fight Islam Makhachev either. But it is what it is. But I'm sure both of them two guys are hard to book. You got tough guys that aren't, the top guys right now. But they're still lurking on the outskirts, ready to chew on any of them guys that fall off too far.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, most likely hopefully after this fight, if he gets the dub, especially if he can do it in fantastic fashion, they'll put some respect on his name and give him somebody that's worth, what he's brought to the table, which is somebody at least in the top 8, like you said. So, word, fellas. Well, it's another one in the books.
Real quick, while we're here, Nick Diaz planning on coming out of retirement early
2021. Let's go!
Nick Diaz? walking around at 175 to 165 currently for his manager.
So he's
No, he's walking around at 75-65, so I don't know. I don't think he... There's no way Nick Diaz fights at 55,
he's
right?
He's walking around at 75 or 65. Yeah. He's fighting at 55. There's no way he's...
But I'll say this is... The video, if you go on my Instagram, like, he's got abs. Like, this is lean as Nick has ever looked.
Really?
Yeah, in my opinion. It's like when Nate came back and fought Michael Johnson, he was fucking ripped up. And you know he wasn't fucking around. Like, that's what Nick looks like right now.
So, damn. I love the stock and
slap. I love the stock and slap. Let me see some more of it.
Who does he fight? Who do you give him, then? Let's say it is 55.
Robbie fucking Lawler.
I think it'd be 55.
If it's 55, I guess, I mean, you could do him and Conor.
I
would love that fight.
I'd be cool with Cowboy, too. But,
or Cowboy.
If he's coming back at 70, I want him
to fall. It has to be 55, though.
Maybe like he could like, because it's early 2021, he might just be getting his body back in shape. He might bulk up still somewhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if it's 70, I only want Lawler. Like, that would be the perfect fight for him to come back to. Lawler's on a downslope. It's a rematch. It's got history, and both guys are you know they're notorious. Like, everybody knows Robbie Lawler. Everybody knows Nick Diaz. If it's 55. It's tough, because all I can think about is just killers. And
or
you'd be coming back.
Dan Hooker
needs a match. Why you make that face, though?
LeBron just did something disgusting, and I normally crap on everything LeBron does. That was filthy.
Yeah, right. Oh, the GOAT. But I just want to throw that in there before we close the podcast. So.
I like it, man. That'll be really interesting if we get whoever they decide to match him up with. I'm assuming that Dana White and Shelby, they're gonna give them the right opponent to make it worth everybody's, you know, wow. So awesome, fellas. Right. Well, good talking to you, lifers. Thank you for listening. Please make sure you go check out the Lifers Podcast on IG. Click on the link for the merch. Again, use that 20% Labor Day promo code so you can get, you know, some dollars saved up on your purchases. Obviously, there's different shirts. Two Gloves and Dub is gonna be your favorite one, though. All right, so go ahead and go for that one. But support the other shows as well. And Alon, let them know where they can find you.
Find me at Alon Cruz, AlonCruz, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, LinkedIn. Google me. You'll find me.
Nice, nice. All right. Well, we are out. Gentlemen, have a good night. Lifers, you too.
Peace.
Later.